Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. So I'm so glad that you were able to join me again today. Before we go into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view blue, I want to appeal to everybody who is in the law enforcement field who has a story about their law enforcement career. I am collecting more stories for the next edition of True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them. So if you are a law enforcement officer or have been, either retired or a former law enforcement officer, and you have a story you would like to tell, write it down and then send it to me at www.truebluestories.com. Check out truebluestories.com. It'll give you all the submission information, and I'd love to hear from you. Anything that I can do to make law enforcement lives better, safer, and more effective, you can count me in. And I got to tell you about an incredible investigative tool that I have discovered for those detectives involved in any criminal activity, investigations, and crime analysts, too. This is amazing. And it's got a couple different uses. I mean, you can use it for conspiracies. You can use it for murder investigations, drug investigations, trafficking humans. It was originally created for IED investigations. That's improvised explosive devices in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the owner, the president of this company, which is Blue Light LLC, that's Blue Light LLC, is a retired Green Beret Sergeant Major. And they use this stuff very effectively. It is now available to police agencies, big and small. And I got to tell you, I've seen it in use. It is amazing. It's Blue Light LLC, okay? And any criminal investigation where you want to gather the evidence and show the connections to people, this is the product. I've seen it. It's amazing. And these people do incredible work with it. They train you up in it. And it's for big agencies, small agencies. It's being used all over the country. It's in conjunction with IBM. This is amazing, amazing software. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, and that's bluelightllc.com. Check it out, and this will solve crimes and save lives. If you are in law enforcement, you're in the investigative analysis branch, or you're a detective, there is going to be an amazing conference I'm going to be attending. In fact, I'm going to be one of the keynote speakers. It is the Information to Intelligence Summit. That's information, then the number 2, intelligencesummit.com. And this is going to be a three-day event. It's going to be in Denver, Colorado. It's got some phenomenal classes, speakers. And if you are in the law enforcement community, you really should check this out. You're going to get exposed to some major investigative opportunities here as far as learning some institutional knowledge and given some great tools. So once again, it's the it's going to be in Denver, Colorado, and it is going to be May 8th through 11th. May 8th through 11th in Denver, Colorado. Go to Information to Intelligence Summit.com. Information to Intelligence Summit.com. And I'll see you in Denver in May. Now, there's a lot to talk about, so let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
I just returned from doing a speaking engagement to a wonderful law enforcement officers. Very, very dedicated at the National Interdiction Conference. And there were almost 700, 800 officers there from all over the country, including their mayor police leaders, who showed their unity with their officers by coming to this conference for the final banquet, where many of the officers were given awards for their amazing police service. Now, one of the things that I have spoken about, written about, and very much on my mind is leadership of law enforcement. And one of the things that I spoke about at this conference was the need for police leadership to stand up for their officers. And we are facing a crisis of leadership. And what was very heartening to me was when I brought up this topic, the law enforcement officers who were working the streets and were in this audience, a resounding round of applause when I talked about the need for police leadership to stop eating its own. That's what I call it. And the effect on this audience was amazing. See, this touches a chord deep in the hearts of the American law enforcement officer. The people are out there actually doing the job. You know, administrators serve a function. They serve a very important function, but that is a support function. That is that administrators need to make sure that the street guys, the guys who are actually doing the police work, need to have the tools and the support to go out and do this terribly dangerous job. And unfortunately, what we have been seeing is a lack of cojones on the part of police leadership. And this is illustrated by some insanity that I've seen in the last few days coming from several places. One of them is Seattle. Now, I guess I shouldn't be surprised about anything that comes out of Seattle police leadership, because the fact of the matter is they are so deep into the political correctness spectrum that I don't know how cops do any police work over there. They've had numerous police chiefs, and the leadership there has been very stunning in their lack of support for the street cops when it comes down to violent situations. Now, what happened this week is a stark reminder of that. Now, some video came out. Of course, it's always to be the common denominator is a little bit of video. And it shows a very dramatic police takedown. Now, here's the deal. A police officer is facing discipline for how he subdued a man armed with an ice axe. Now, are you kidding me? Guy has got... Well, let me tell you the story, first of all. Suspect goes into a store, steals an ice axe. And if you've ever seen one of these things are nasty looking. They can put they can kill you really easily. It's a massive point and then steel tip, and it can do some serious damage. So he heals it. Police get there, and they try to stop him. And the police camera footage from the body cams shows that this guy is just refusing to stop. So they are trying to clear a space. They're chasing this guy. He's walking, and literally every person that he comes in contact with in the street is a possible victim. So they're following him and following him. For me, I would have taken him down a lot faster. But they continue to follow this guy down the street. And then an officer gets ahead of him. And when he has the opportunity, he tackles him. Okay. I think that's a great police work. It shows courage. It shows skill. And how is he being thanked for this? Well, he's under investigation. And the fact of the matter is that the police leaders who are allowing this and perpetuating this kind of investigation, what that does is demonstrates to the street cops, you know what? I can't be trusted to lead you. Because if you're going to go after a guy for simply trying to save the lives of others and utilizing his own courage and skill to do so to take down an armed suspect, what you're doing leading a police department, because you sure as hell shouldn't be. So that was one of the incidents that happened this week. But it's not the only one. There was another one, and my mind just spins when I see some of this insanity. The other one came out of Milwaukee. Now, Milwaukee has had its share of issues with their police leadership. They had a chief there that was pretty liberal when it came down to his viewpoints, and it had a serious morale problem on the department. Now, he's gone, and there's a new chief there, a guy named Morales. And from everything that I've heard, this guy is a pretty decent guy. Came up the ranks, supports his people, but now politics has jumped in here. So there's another, of course, videotape. Once again, a woman called the police because her brother was acting crazy. This guy is huge. He's like 6'5", 320 pounds. He's apparently high on some type of narcotic. Police try to detain him, and he refuses, and he starts to fight. Now, there's a videotape taken by a bystander, and somebody posted it, and the police leadership, they folded like a cheap suit. As soon as this came out, they put, there's three officers involved in this, okay? Now, they're literally in a fight for their lives with this guy. This guy is punching them. They're hitting him. He's hitting them in the face. There are several of them are bleeding, and they don't have any tasers. And this is kind of interesting. They didn't have tasers because a supervisor had not issued them. He was mad that somebody had misplaced some of the taser holsters. That's a whole nother topic here. But this shows that there's a real leadership problem on this department. So this video shows that these officers are doing everything they can to take this guy into custody, and it's not working. This guy's, he's not listening to anybody. He's high as hell. He's a powerful man, and he's assaulting them. He's beating them. Well, eventually, they get him down, and during this thing, they're telling him to get on the, and they're using some curse words, which is pretty normal in policing, and they eventually get him in custody. They did pepper spray. It had no effect. One of them from another unit did actually have a taser. They tried that. That didn't work. He charges the officers. They eventually get him down. They swooned him, and the suspect flailed around, and eventually they got him into custody. Well, what happens? They put three of the officers on administrative duty for, quote, inappropriate language. And then they suspended him for what they're saying is excessive force. Now, I viewed this videotape. There's nothing excessive about what happened here. And the fact that this chief bowed to political pressure, that tells me that even he's the new chief, they're going to have the same problems as they did with the old one. Now, I'm hoping that once he reviews all of this, that he's going to exonerate these officers. But the fact of the matter is, simply by taking them and putting them into another assignment that is not on the street, that's a punishment. They may not call it a punishment, but it sure as hell is. What they are doing is sending a terrible message, not only to the police officers on the Milwaukee Police Department, but also to the citizens, basically giving them carte blanche to make complaints against these officers and revealing that the administration prefers to kowtow to the political correctness regimen as opposed to doing the right thing and backing their officers. This is something we're seeing all over the country, and this is, in fact, an epidemic. I'm disappointed. I was hoping that this new police chief would show that he had the backs of these officers, and I'm hoping that perhaps this is an aberration and not a sign of things to come. This is my message to all American law enforcement officers. The job is dangerous enough. You have the right to leadership. Leadership that is effective. Leadership that not only appreciates the job that you do, but gives you the backing that you need to accomplish it safely and effectively. And here's my view to police administrators. If you don't have the guts to stand up for your cops, get the hell out. And that is my view from the blue. If you are a law enforcement officer in the United States, or if you are a company that hires off-duty law enforcement officers for, say, security jobs, traffic jobs, things like that, you want to listen to this advertisement, because this is a company that's out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the states in the United States. They're called Law Enforcement Specialists Incorporated. And they have a really interesting business model. They take police officers. If you're interested in working extra duty jobs, and who isn't, right? I mean, it's hard to make ends meet on simply your salary. Contact law enforcement specialists, and they will put you on the list for extra duty jobs. Just like you go through your own agency to get extra duty jobs, well, they do it for you. And they work with your agency. It's really interesting. They're the only company I know of that does this. So if you go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, you can find out all about this company. And then you can also contact them and make yourself available for extra duty assignments. If you are a company that hires off-duty cops, then you want to do the same thing. Law enforcement specialists, they're out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States, and check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. And this is a great opportunity for both law enforcement and people who hire them to kind of make things easier. So check them out. That's law enforcement specialists at offdutypoliceofficers.com. Now, if you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's just, it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. You don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com, go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, and with me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a 30-year veteran of the St. Louis County Police Department. His name is John Newsham, and not only is he a retired law enforcement officer, but an incredibly tenuous detective who has created an organization to train other police officers in a myriad of law enforcement techniques. John, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Randy, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this evening and also to have a little talk with the people who tune into your wonderful broadcast. I never miss one, and it's always a highlight for me to listen to you speak. I follow you completely, and I believe in your message 100%.
Well, it's nice to find somebody actually listens to what I say.
Hey, you're followed very heartily in St. Louis. There's just a tremendous number of people that follow you.
That's great to hear, man. It's great to hear. And John, you have spent literally your entire adult life as a law enforcement officer, and much of that time as a homicide investigator. So let's go a little bit into your history. You did 30 years with the St. Louis Police Department. You did 15 years as a detective, and how many with homicide?
I was in there just about 7 years.
7 years, and that was pretty much where you really found your forte, that you found your love.
You know, I always was kind of a violent crime guy. The areas that I patrolled for the St. Louis County Police Department bordered like with the city of St. Louis, so we were in a pretty high crime area. We saw a lot of violence. My goal always was to get into the Bureau of Crimes Against Persons, which, you know, we do robberies, homicides, major assaults, and sexual assaults, only because I just thought, you know, that was the main crimes that we needed to solve. Not that anything else was not important, but there we had some true victims as opposed to victims of property crimes. So that was the fuel for me. I enjoyed every single second in there. You know, I've had my friends and family have always asked, you know, didn't that wear you out? Didn't you get tired? And my answer to all that was no. You know, some days were busier than others, but as long as it wasn't one of my brothers or sisters in uniform that were hurt and I had to investigate that kind of a crime, I just didn't get tired of it, you know, just a little busier than others, and that was all it was. My business partner, Gary Fortney, spent over three different stints. He spent about 14 years in robbery homicide division. And Gary would tell you exactly the same thing. For us, that was the juice.
St. Louis County Police Department is a big agency and a very, very busy agency. Tell us a little bit about the St. Louis Police Department.
Well, we're separate from St. Louis City. That's the Metropolitan St. Louis City Police Department.
Right.
St. Louis County covers everything that's unincorporated, as well as a lot of municipalities. St. Louis County, the police department was formed in 1955. Prior to that, it was the St. Louis County Sheriff's Department. And when I was on the department, I think we had a maximum then of about 800 officers at the very most. Currently, the county is at about 1,100 officers because we have contracts with some of the municipalities who don't have their own police department. So they, you know, we cover everything. And even for a lot of the ones that have their own police department, major crimes because they just didn't have the manpower, we did their investigations for them.
Exactly. So, you know, you retired from the department, and then you and your business partner created a training entity, which it does an amazing amount of training. It's Vista, VistaBlueSeminars.com, Vista Blue Seminars. And
correct.
Tell us about what you're doing now.
Well, Gary actually started the company himself in 2011. I actually came on board with him about 16 months ago. I spent about the first six and a half, almost 7 years of my retirement working at my good friend's driving range. And I would do various things around there, fix clubs, you know, handle the money behind the counter and things like that. I kind of got a little bit tired of that, and I was always kind of jealous of Gary teaching at the academy. So he pitched it to me one day. He goes, hey, I want to expand the company. Are you interested? And I said, absolutely. So we trained mainly out of the St. Louis County Police, Metropolitan Police Academy. I guess they would call it the County Municipal Police Academy. And we teach classes to officers, you know, from the very first year they're out of the department, I mean, out of the academy, to guys who've been on 20 and 25 years. We teach everything from the very basic of report writing all the way up to an advanced homicide investigation. Excuse me.
So wait, hold on a second. So you retire from the department and you retire to a driving range?
I did. You know, golf is my passion. I love police work, but my main focus now is to play golf and smoke cigars. And whatever I work on the side, that's just kind of an extra thing.
I love it.
But I'll tell you what, though, Randy, once I got into it, and I wasn't really sure how I was going to be able to teach. I wasn't sure that I had, you know, I had what it took. And after about the first half hour of, you know, of the training, the first class I ever helped Gary teach, I was like, you know what, I can do this. And Gary said the same thing. He goes, hey, you're kind of a natural, which surprised a lot of people because, you know, people who know me through the police department, I'm not exactly a touchy-feely kind of person. I was pretty hard-nosed and pretty hard-driven when I worked, but I've always had this this want or this need to tell other people, you know, what we do. Gary and I spend a tremendous amount of time reviewing our local cases here. We break down cases that he and I investigated, so it's not like we're just reading something on the internet and then lecturing about it. We use a lot of video training, like in the interview and interrogation class, about how to break suspects down. We go through our own crime scenes that we handled when we teach the advanced homicide class. So we're showing hands-on what we did. And we always tell people, look, we know a few things because we've seen a few things. We screwed some things up, but we learned how to do it better. And that's our goal, is to make the guys now be as good as they possibly can.
You know, one of the things about law enforcement training, it's a tough subject to get people to buy into, especially when you aren't actually, you know, teaching within the law enforcement academy system or, you know, for the agency itself. So you're, in essence, out there, you know, teaching cops from all over, not just St. Louis, but from all over the country.
Correct. We do get some people in. You know, one of the things, and I know you understand this from your time with Las Vegas PD, when departments run short of funds, the first thing that gets cut is training.
Exactly.
It's kind of a, I won't say it's an easy thing to do, but it's something that they feel like they can cut back on. It's like, folks, you're already policemen, you know how to do the job. But if we don't stay up on all the latest techniques, are continually honing the same skills that we've learned over the years, you know, that's where the level of service falls off at the police department. We're very fortunate at our academy. The chief of St. Louis County Police Department, Colonel John Belmar, who actually was Lieutenant Belmar when I was in a homicide unit, so I got to work under him for several years. And you will not find a finer man or a smarter man to work for. He believes in training.
That's really nice. That's something nice to say.
Absolutely. Chief Belmar, along with all the chiefs in the St. Louis area, they back our guys 100%. They stand by them. A man you're very familiar with, Chief Tom Jackson, retired from the Ferguson Police Department, who led them through that nightmare that went on there. Again, he was my captain when I was in the county drug unit at the end of my career. And another man, nobody finer, nobody smarter or more caring to the public. So in Chief Belmar, one of the best things for the chief is he makes sure that the academy, along with the board of directors for the academy, make sure that the academy stays very well funded so that they can afford to have the officers in there to train. The only thing that kind of is a detriment sometimes, the smaller departments, the smaller municipal departments sometimes have manpower problems where they can't always break their people loose to go to extra training. I mean, they always come for their post 24 certified hours that they have to maintain their peace officer license in Missouri, but they can't always get freed up to come to, you know, to extra training, which is, you know, that's basically, now we teach the 24-hour post training also, so we make sure everybody gets their hours every year, but it's the other classes, you know, that really help you hone your skills. It's not the same run-of-the-mill things every single year.
You know, let's talk about that for a second, because every state is different. One of the things about law enforcement training, and of course, I think you probably know that during my tenure with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, one of my jobs was the supervisor in charge of advanced training. And we in Nevada, just like you in Missouri, the state mandated 24 hours of mandatory training in order to maintain your certification. However, not every state is like that. There are states that actually only mandate 2 hours of advanced training, which is, in my estimation, something that is actually criminal. Because when you tell law enforcement officers, we demand of you that you are professional, that you are competent, that you maintain your skills, and yet we're not going to give you the opportunity to attend training, what you're doing is you're basically setting them up to fail.
Exactly. And one of the biggest things that we're seeing now, and you know, if people just pay attention to the news and what's going on, or every time something happens with a police department, you see departments falling, you know, under civil judgment, and because they, you know, the attorneys will go back and say, well, wait a minute, these officers weren't trained, you know, they've only got X amount of training time in on whatever particular thing they might be being sued over. And, you know, to say later on, well, we're trying, but courts and juries don't want to hear that, well, we didn't have enough time or we didn't have enough money to train these guys. When the defense attorney stands up and tells the jury, ladies and gentlemen, this could be you or your family member tomorrow. And that's grossly unfair to the police department. You know, the misnomer is that, you know, more training can fix absolutely everything in the world. A police officer responds in the blink of an eye to, you know, to shoot someone, and they think, well, he should have more training. Well, Randy, you and I both know, when it happens in that split second, you know, it's instinct. It's what you practice, what you've been trained on before. But no amount of training in the world can have you ready to handle absolutely everything that comes up. It changes with every single instance.
You're absolutely correct. And this is one of the things that I think is an issue, you know, about law enforcement throughout the country, and that is that we expect and we demand almost perfection from our officers, and yet we're not going to give them the opportunity in many instances to get the disciplinary training so that they are competent in all of the skills that they are required to be. And then we're going to hold them accountable and in some senses send them to prison if they aren't.
You know, one of the biggest misnomers out there is that people think the police don't care about the public. And, you know, it drives me absolutely crazy when my fellow brothers and sisters out there in uniform are portrayed as being these machines that are uncaring. They're out there targeting people right and left. Nobody in the world, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, expects that level of perfection more than a police department or each individual officer. Every one of us wants to do that job to the very highest level that we can every single time. I'm sure you never went out there one time and said, well, I'm just going to half-ass this and we'll see what happens. Every single time I went out there and I had to do something, I wanted to make sure I did it as the best that I possibly could and better than the last time I did. So for people to think that we don't care, that's just absolutely ludicrous in my opinion.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, let's get back to what you're doing now. I mean, here's the thing. You committed yourself. You spent 30 years as a cop. That's a long, long time. And then you took a little time off. You did your golfing thing, which I think is tremendous, but yet you were called back, and you were called back to, you know, in essence, create a legacy. That's what training is, because every time that you play a role in the life of someone else, especially in the training aspect, you're leaving a little bit of yourself behind. Was that part of what motivated you?
Yeah, you know, tradition is one of the things in police work. I when I came on in 1981, I worked on a squad that had almost every one of those guys on my squad had, you know, at least 10 years on. And a lot of them had 20 to 25 years on. So I was able to learn from guys who'd been around a really long time. a gentleman named Don Hurst, who unfortunately is deceased now, was my training officer when I came on. I always looked at Don as being one of the finest police officers I ever saw. He could do absolutely anything. I tried to pattern myself after him, and I picked to him all the time, trying to figure out what he did. So the same thing went for me and for Gary. Our message is, you know, look, here's what we did. You know, this is a passion for us. We make a little bit of money at this. We do not charge exorbitant rates by any stretch of imagination. And I'm sure you know from having run the training, there are people out there who have got all these qualifications or a resume that says they did everything except actually work the cases themselves, and they're charging departments a fortune. Now, we do make a little bit. I'm never going to say that we don't do that, but our goal is not to make a lot of money at this. Our goal is to make the officers better, and that only comes from really caring about the guys, wanting to see it better. Every time I see something on the news that goes wrong, it tears me up inside thinking, you know what? These are sometimes very simple things that could be fixed, and you have to have people who have done it before. You can have instructors in the academy, but if they don't have the practical experience to teach something, all they're doing is regurgitating what they've read in a book. And there's a difference between the theory and the practical application of it. That's what really drew Gary and I into forming this company and pushing as hard as we do. Gary, my business partner, teaches at the St. Louis University Medical Legal School. They put that on a couple times a year. And it's run by a lady named Dr. Maria Teresa Tersigny Tarrant. And
that's a hell of a moniker.
It's quite a name. So we call her Dr. MT.
Okay.
And she's got an IQ about as long as your zip code. She helped develop the body farm in Tennessee, the FBI's, you know, recovery training facility there. So Dr. Tarrant, who runs St. Louis University anthropology department, we bring her in, and she specializes in showing how to properly, you know, recover the graves, how to document everything, you know, layer by layer, how to do the digs correctly so you're not losing evidence. We have two separate, you know, full skeletal remains in the ground. Now, these have been scrubbed. It's not like we're throwing bodies in the ground. But Gary and I, in the hot weather, dug these graves along with a couple other people, buried them, and then we let them sit for like 4 or 5 months. We take the class out. They do some classroom work. Then they go out with the tools just like our, you know, our crime scene guys do, and then we start digging, and they start sifting, and they recover the bones. And Dr. Tarrant is teaching them, you know, the exact way to do it. So everything is mapped out perfectly. So it can be presented in court without a defense attorney being able to go, well, wait a minute, you made a mistake there. Because again, if they want to stand there and argue with her over her qualifications, you can do that all day long, but you're going to lose it. So that class pertains mainly to more people who want to be into the crime scene unit. And we get some guys from homicide there also, but it's mainly the crime scene guys who are going to do up all the digging. The reason we came up with that class was both Gary and I could handle a class where we had to excavate a body. I had a murder investigation went on for about 7 months where we dug the guy up in the middle of the night in Franklin, or actually Jefferson County, Missouri, right at the Franklin County border, where, again, we had to, you know, it took a tremendous long investigation to get to the grave site and then to remove it. The one really good thing that worked out for us there was that the guys who actually killed my victim wrapped him in two or three tarps and buried him, where had they just thrown the body out in the woods where they, you know, where they buried him, you know, the animals would have scattered it in 2 or 3 days and we never would have had a thing. So here they wrapped up everything. It kept the body intact. The DNA was there. It kept their DNA with the body, and our terrific lab people who we had out there with us, and I can't sell their virtues enough to you, were able to recover 3 different sets of DNA, which made the prosecution that much easier for us. So that one there was a complete team effort.
So you've taken your 30 years and Gary's similar amount of time, and now you are training police officers from Missouri and from around the country. What are your plans for the future? Hold on a second before we even go there. So what topics do you cover at Vista Blue seminars?
Well, we teach a basic report writing class, which starts with just, you know, the very basics for people on the street. For the last class we did just a few months ago, we actually had 3 or 4 guys who only had 6 or 7 months out of the academy, and their departments thought that their report writing could be a little bit better. So we have them in for 2 days. We run them through different scenarios. We have them write reports where we help them, not teaching them composition or essay classes, but how to get the terminology correct, you know, how to worry about spelling, getting the proper information in the report. We also teach an advanced report writing class where we have essentially the major crimes investigators so that they understand what has to go in a homicide report. I know from your experience like mine, that's a completely different animal than just writing a basic report. There is so much more detail that has to go in there. And what we tell these people, when you're writing these advanced reports, the only grade you're allowed to get on that report is an A. Because if you don't get an A in every single report, some murderer might walk free. And department, my department for sure, if you're not getting A's and getting guys convicted, you're not going to be in that unit for very long. Yes. We also teach a courtroom testimony class. I just started this one up this year. And one of the things we were looking at when we were trying to figure out what else could we offer, it kind of dawned on me that other than maybe a few hours in the academy, how many people have ever had actual, you know, training testifying in court? Now, when you and I came on, you know, I came on in 1981. Back then, there was a lot of parking tickets, and not parking tickets per se, but moving violations, shoplifters, things like that. Those kind of cases actually went to hearings or went to trial. It's not that way anymore. There's more plea agreements because there's such a backlog. I mean, I understand a tremendous caseload, but guys don't learn how to actually testify in court. It's not that hard, and we try to teach them how to walk in and how to win over one juror to make sure you've got that one person you're relating to. So that I always say, you know what, if you own one juror in there, you know, make a connection with them. No matter what happens, at the very least, you've got a hung jury. And once you've got one juror on your side, then you can work on everybody else. That was always my main focus. So this one kind of hit me because I had some guys that worked with me, you know, in the Crimes Against Persons Unit who had maybe been in court two or three times in their entire career before they were stepping into the witness box in a murder trial.
Yeah.
And you start taking on some of these big, you know, the big gun defense attorneys, and boy, that can be a long day for you sitting on that witness stand. So we started that class up, and that's met with some really good reviews. We use a lot of video breakdown there. I was able to find some people testifying in court. Now, we can't do anything local cases because Missouri does not allow you to, they don't broadcast any trials, but a lot of the states do. So we break that down and say, you know, here's what's going right, here's what's going wrong. We teach guys how to testify in not just trials, but also they're taking depositions. There's more and more of that going on all the time. And that's completely different, as you know, from testifying during a trial. So that's one that we did. We do a basic and an advanced interview and interrogation class where I'm a very controlling person when I did my interviews and interrogations. I'm a big reader. Dr. James Mitchell, who did a lot of the interrogations of the people from 9/11, but just different terrorists. He wrote a book called Enhanced Interrogation that I learned a lot from. And I always felt that, you know, nothing was better, nothing was more satisfying than you've got a suspect in the room now, you've got him locked in there, and now you're going to go after him. And it's up to you to get a confession out of him, you know, and sometimes it might take you 8, 10, 12, 15 hours, but you have to do that.
So you're basically a full-service law enforcement training facility. Where do you work out of? Is it the city of St. Louis?
Well, it's actually located in Wellston, Missouri, which is in St. Louis County, but it's called the County and Municipal Police Academy, the CMPA, and it's essentially run by the St. Louis County Police Department, but they have officers from different municipalities assigned there that instruct also.
Do you travel outside of the state in order to train?
Well, we do some training with the police recruits in Kansas City, Missouri. Gary and I also contract with a company called Blue Tracks, and essentially what they are, they're the people that put electronic tracking devices in money packs from banks, and they also put tracking devices in pharma packs and pharmacies now, since so many of those are being robbed. And so we train the recruits there. We train at some of the different municipalities in St. Louis, the O'Fallon PD, that's a satellite training facility for us. St. Peter's is a satellite training facility for us. And we're making inroads like in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, you know, in the outlying areas where we kind of look and see what are they offering. And if they're not offering what we teach, we're offering to bring it to them. We'll take our show on the road for them. It's really not very difficult for us. And again, it's one of the most economical training programs that there is around right now.
So if a law enforcement,
we're not profit driven.
Okay, so if a police department wants to send people to a homicide investigation school that you guys put on, how do they do that?
Well, they can simply check the website for the St. Louis County. It's actually the County Municipal Police Academy. It's CMPA. I'd have to send you I can send you the link for it. I don't have it right in front of me. And there's a list of classes that are being offered there. We get a lot of people from the outlying counties around St. Louis because a lot of them are more rural counties. And we've offered to them that say they may only have like 8 or 10 deputies, on, and they can't break their guys loose for 3 or 4 days. We'll take it on the road to their place, and we can instruct them along with some of the other, departments that are right around their area. And that way they don't have to pay to send, 6 or 7 guys to St. Louis and put them up in hotels and feed them and everything like that. They bring Gary and I there, and it's a lot easier for us to get to them and to, pay for our expenses, which are, minimal, a hotel room, and 2 meals a day, as opposed to, doing 6 guys going away.
Right. And so you're available.
We can do this anywhere.
And you're available to do that outside of the state of Missouri as well.
Yes, sir, we are. All of our files are post-certified already through the state of Missouri. Excuse me. And like you said, some states, there's only a couple of them around here. I think Kansas, I know Illinois is not one. I believe Oklahoma also has the post-24-hour requirement like Missouri does. But all of our classes are on file with the state of Missouri and completely certified. So no one would ever lose anything, by bringing us in. This will assist them. They also get credit for the training hours that they have for the year.
So what is your website information?
Ours is VistaBlueSeminars.com.
VistaBlueSeminars.com, okay. And
and they find us on Facebook as well under that.
Well, that's great. We're running out of time, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio. The fact that you are continuing the tradition, passing on that, some very specific knowledge, especially when it comes to, the very difficult subject of homicide investigations. I appreciate you taking that time and sharing what you have.
Randy, Gary, and I very much appreciate you having us on the radio with you. It's a pleasure to talk to you. It was wonderful to meet with you. And thank you for helping us promote not just our company, but promoting the message that, you and I, take to heart so much.
I appreciate that, John. Thank you.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week I have way too many names to read. The first is Master Deputy James Lester Kirk Jr. of the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office in South Carolina. Master Deputy James Kirk suffered a heart attack during a combat firearms training at the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office. He had just completed the course, which involved a simulated officer down event in which he had to engage targets while moving a 125-pound sandbag to a cover. He collapsed as he walked back to the staging area. Deputy Kirk has served with the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office for 3 years after having retired from the Lancaster Police Department with 25 years of service. He is survived by his wife and 4 children. Master Deputy James Lester Jr. End of watch, April 24th, 2018. The second law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this week is Police Officer Chuy Cordova of the Nogales Police Department in Arizona. Police Officer Jesus Cordova was shot and killed while attempting to apprehend a carjacking suspect in the 2900 block of North Grand Avenue at approximately 2:45 p.m. The subject had carjacked a vehicle in Patagonia and fled from Santa Cruz County deputies into Nogales, where he attempted to carjack another vehicle. Nogales officers had responded to the attempted carjacking and located the suspect outside of a car. As officers attempted a traffic stop,
Van exited the vehicle and opened fire on Officer Cordova, who was still in his vehicle. Officer Cordova was struck multiple times. He was flown to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. The man then fled the scene, carjacked a third vehicle. He was located a short time later, taken into custody. Officer Cordova had served with the Nogales Police Department for 1 year and had previously served with the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office for 10 years. He is survived by his three children and expectant fiance. Police Officer Jesus Chuy Cordova, Nogales Police Department, Arizona. End of watch, Friday, April 27th, 2018. Next officer to die in the line of duty was Officer Charles Weitz. Police Officer Charles Weitz of the Round Rock Police Department. Police Officer Charles Weitz succumbed to injuries sustained on February 25th, 2018, while directing traffic around the scene of a fatal accident on I-35 near Round Rock Avenue. A vehicle operated by a drunk driver struck him, causing him to suffer severe injuries. Officer Weitz was transported to a local hospital, where he remained in grave condition until succumbing to his injuries on April 27th. The driver who struck him was initially charged with intoxication assault. Officer Weitz had served with the Round Rock Police Department for 19 years. He is survived by wife and stepson. Police Officer Charles Weitz of the Round Rock, Texas Police Department. End of watch, April 27th, 2018. The next officer to give his life in the line of duty was Officer Rogelio Santander Jr., also known as Roger. Police Officer Rogelio Santander of the Dallas Police Department. Police Officer Rogelio Santander succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained the previous day while he and two other officers attempted to arrest a shoplifting suspect at a Home Depot store on Forest Central Drive. An off-duty officer working overtime at the store and the store's loss prevention officer had detained a subject who attempted to shoplift in the store. During the investigation, it was determined the man had an outstanding felony warrant, and the off-duty officer requested additional units. Officer Santander and another officer arrived at the store and remained with the subject in the loss prevention office as the off-duty officer confirmed the warrant. As Officer Santander and the other officer attempted to place the man in custody, he drew a handgun from his pocket and shot both officers and the loss prevention officer, critically wounding all three. The man fled the scene but was located later in the day following a vehicle pursuit. Both wounded police officers and the loss prevention officer were transported to a local hospital, where Officer Santander succumbed to his wounds the following morning. Officer Santander has served with the Dallas Police Department for 3 years. Rogelio Santander Jr. of the Dallas Police Department gave his life in the line of duty. And the next officer to die in the line of duty was Police Officer Rob Pitts of the Terre Haute Police Department, Indiana. Police Officer Rob Pitts was shot and killed while conducting a homicide investigation at the Garter Quarter Apartments on Linwood Court. Investigators were following up on leads from a homicide that occurred earlier in the day. As Officer Pitts and other detectives approached the homicide suspect's apartment, the man opened fire on them, fatally wounding Officer Pitts. Officer Pitts was transported to a local hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject who shot him was located deceased inside of his apartment after barricading himself inside. Officer Pitts had served with the Terre Haute Police Department for 16 years. Police Officer Rob Pitts, Terre Haute Police Department, end of watch, 5-4-2018. All of these officers made the ultimate sacrifice, and may they rest in peace. Now, being a man of a certain age, maybe I think I'm not going to tell you what that age is, but I have found that getting rid of those few extra pounds that I keep on seeing increasing over the years has been more and more difficult. I try to eat right. I do a pretty good job of it. I exercise regularly, but it's those stubborn pounds that I have had such an issue with. Well, guess what? They're gone now. They're gone now because I went to Bell Medical in Las Vegas. Now, Bell Medical is a body sculpting salon, if you will. They have some incredible technology at their disposal. And they, in one afternoon, in an absolutely painless procedure, I took off almost 2 inches off of my midsection. You heard me right. It was one afternoon, 2 inches. There is a recovery period. There's like a little bit of discomfort, but it is essentially completely painless. It's done in an outpatient atmosphere. You're not put under. It's amazing. And I saw some incredible results, and I also saw photographs of people who had been who had used this technology and saw tremendous results as well. I highly recommend them. It's a really easy procedure. You can check them out at Bell, B-E-L-L-E, Medical, Vegas.com. That's Bell Medical Vegas.com. And they've also got, they've got several places in Utah and also in Las Vegas. So check them out. I'm telling you, I saw amazing results. It was one afternoon, and it took off inches that I've been trying to take off for years. Check them out, bellmedicalvegas.com. I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I really do appreciate the fact that you spent some time with me. Now, you can check me out on Facebook if you go under Randy Sutton, public figure. Also, Twitter, at LT Randy Sutton. I'm finally getting out there in the social media world, so feel free to hit me up over there and follow everything that I post on Facebook, which I do every single day. I want to thank my sponsors.